Good morning and welcome to Rich Answers, a public affairs program brought to you by Light 100.5 WRCH and the Conference of Churches. I'm Reverend Dr. Shelley Best, and I'd like to welcome you to an hour of conversation and inspiration with transformational leaders in and about Greater Hartford. Today we are fortunate to have with us singer-songwriter Grayson Hugh, a West Hartford, Connecticut native. You can tell very well that his music has spanned a lifetime. His 1989 hit, Talk It Over, became a top 20 hit. Grayson is currently working on a new album called Back to the Soul, an independent project being crowdfunded by a few good friends. Welcome.
Very nice to be here. Shelley, thanks for having me here.
We're glad to have you here, and with full disclosure, we recognize that you are the son of our former producer, Ivor Hugh, who's had a wonderful reputation here in the greater Hartford community. So when we think about your life, we know that you started in a household of music. So talk about how you knew you were going to be walking down that pathway yourself.
Well, you know, one of my earliest memories is listening to my father's records as a little boy. And I'm going to tell you, give away my age and talk about the 50s. You know, 55 around there, and I'd be listening to people like Harry Belafonte. My parents would hear me doing the, you know, from the background. You know, I got exposed to a lot of different kinds of music, and classical, jazz, Ray Charles, everything, Nina Simone, and it was in Dad's record collection.
He had an incredible collection and a love of all kinds of music. So it was unusual for you to be exposed to such a range, to be exposed to such a range of music.
Yeah.
So what kind of music tied you in?
Well, really, from a very early age, it was a wide range, like you say. I mean, it was the Nina Simone, Ray Charles, Elvis Presley. I remember friends of my parents had the first Elvis record, and I heard that, and I said, wow, that falsetto he does it in Blue Moon. And then I heard some of the blues artists that he had, Willie Dixon, Sonny Boy Williamson, Muddy Waters. And then I heard people like the Everly Brothers and the Beatles, and you kind of combine a lot of that stuff, and you get where I'm coming from. But I think one of my earliest influences was Southern Soul. People like Otis Redding, Wilson Pickett, Sam and Dave, Clarence Carter, Solomon Burke. And this I just loved. And it goes into the gospel church style, too, which is kind of a Southern Soul style musically. And this record is called Back to the Soul because I'm literally going back to my Southern Soul roots.
And when you think about your childhood and entree into music, what did you start playing?
I can't even remember. It was almost out of the womb as far as I can tell. My mom would say, well, he pretty much came out playing the piano. And we always had one in the house. Actually, we didn't. We got one when I was a little older. A friend of the family's got us one that had a little bit more money than we did. So I glommed onto that thing and just played that for as long as I could remember. I also studied the saxophone and played that, and drums, too.
So in looking at your background, it says in your bio that you decided to walk away from high school and pursue your music. Talk about how your family received that and what you did at that time.
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm doing one of the songs of my new record that we're mixing yesterday and today. We'll finish it. It's called Rock and Roll Man, about just that. And the first verse is, I was 17 when I left home. Ooh, I had to leave. I had to roam. Ooh, I got kicked out of 3 high schools. I had to quit. I broke the rules. And it's basically my parents were very accepting that I wanted to leave and do music because I knew I always wanted to do that. But my dad said, and quoting my lyrics again, school or a job, son, it's one or the other. And so I had about 143 different jobs in about 2 years. And then I realized, you know what, I'm just going to play in bands at night. And then I found different jobs in the day. But I knew from a very early age, and, you know, my parents were very accepting of this, which is kind of unusual. I had friends that their fathers would say, no way you're going to be a musician. You know, they were a lot stricter. But Dad, as you know, having known him, was
He
respected music, and he was a musician.
So talk about your first bands and how you entered that stage of becoming a recording artist.
Well, you know, my first band, I think really the actual formal band was probably around age 13, 14. And we played junior, you know, school dances and church dances and the YMCA, American Legion. And went right up through into the 80s for, you know, since about 1964 to 1985 when I moved to New York and eventually got signed to RCA Records. So that's what I did. And I just got tired of being, it was frustrating. I was, you know, being in the local music scene here in Hartford in the early 80s, I wanted to do more. I knew I could get, I had faith that I could get signed to a record deal.
And talk about the music community in the 80s in Hartford. There was a lot going on at that time. It was a very different scene, the beginning of the Advocate and different places to hear music.
That's right. Absolutely. And my wife, Polly Messer, who's with us today, was one of the early members of a well-known Connecticut band, Eight to the Bar.
Oh, absolutely.
When they were in their swing mode, really, back then. And that's when I first met her. And that's a whole other story. Over 35 years ago. But both her band and my bands played in all these great venues in Hartford. The Russian Lady.
Oh, yes.
36 Lewis Street, which was actually a house that my grandma, a friend of my grandmother's, knew from our church, Center Church in Hartford. And some people bought it and made it into a bar. And so many other places I can't even.
Arch Street Tavern.
Mad Murphy's. Yes.
Stage West.
She played more than I did.
Eight to the Bar was a very popular group at that point in time.
Yes.
So things were very alive in the art scene of Hartford, mm-hmm. and so you were involved in music at that time, and then made your way to the big city of New York. How did you end up finding someone to sign you? Tell that story.
Well, you know, I call it my elevator story, and people, it sounds made up, but it really is true. I moved to New York and I literally camped out in the basement of a friend's barbershop. On an army cot. And I just was determined to stay there till I got signed. And the guy that would end up being my producer was in an elevator. He was leaving his girlfriend's apartment on the Upper East Side. I was visiting the woman who was my manager at the time. And he saw me carrying a synthesizer. We struck up a conversation. He told me he had just produced a record by the Blow Monkeys, some guys from England that were kind of soul, influenced by soul music, and later I got to meet Curtis Mayfield through them at a concert that he was also performing at. But he said, you got any music I can hear? And I said, yeah, so let's go back upstairs to my manager's. I played it. He didn't believe it was me. He said, prove that that's you singing. So I did, and he was pointing to his arm. And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, look, I got goosebumps. So he said, you don't have a record deal? I can get your record deal. So he hired me to sing on the Blow Monkeys album. She was only a grocer's daughter, a critique of Maggie Thatcher, but to sort of soul music. and then from there, the folks at RCA decided they wanted to sign me.
So what was your first album?
First album, major label album, was Blind to Reason on RCA in 1988. But the actual first record was done in South Glastonbury, Connecticut, called Grace and Hugh, produced and recorded by Polly's late ex-husband, my good friend, Ron Scalise.
Powerful.
Yeah, there's quite a story there, all how our lives intertwined.
So your first album with a major label was called?
Blind to Reason.
And so the top 20 hit off that album was?
Talk It Over and also Bring It All Back. But the first big... The biggest hit was Talk It Over. Yeah.
So let's take a break and listen to Talk It Over.
Promises are broken, old wounds are open, and love walks out that door. Two got to make up, you're ready to break up. Too late you wake up, and love walks out that door.
Out that door. Baby, oh sweet baby, I didn't mean a word that I said. Well, now you know that I love you. Can we talk it over in bed?
I never meant to hurt you.
Must have been out of my head.
Out of my head.
Well, now tell me that you still want me. Talk it over in bed.
Talk it over
in bed.
Talk.
Harsh words are spoken, promises are broken.
Using harsh words
are open, and love walks out that door. Too proud to make up.
I know you're too
ready
proud
to break up. Too late you wake up. And love walks out that door.
Out that door.
Walking out that door.
Welcome back. We're talking with Grace and Hugh, and we just heard Talk It Over. How did that song come about?
Well, this was actually a song, the only one that I didn't actually write. I arranged it. I was working with a guy when I was like 1986 in Livingston, New Jersey. He was a friend of my, the woman that was a manager at the time. And we were co-writing, but then I said, look, can you help me get a record deal? And he said, yeah, let me show you some songs of mine. He took out literally a suitcase of cassette tapes. And there was a song. He went through about 10. And then he had one. He said, yeah, Smokey Robinson rejected this one. And he put it in. And Sandy Linzer had actually written some hits with the Four Seasons and the Toys, Lover's Concerto, Cool and the Gang later. Anyway, I heard the song. And I said, wait, go back to that one. You're saying Smokey Robinson didn't want that? Wait a minute. I could slow that down and make that like a Sam Cooke kind of with a big gospel background. I heard it in my mind right away. And he said, take it home. Do what you want. Make me a hit. You know, So I rearranged it, and I guess I should have asked for co-writing credit, but I was young and naive.
And just happy to be
I just happy to be, you know, and I created a song out of it, wrote an arrangement, and re-recorded it, and that was one of the ones that RCA just loved.
And talk about how it felt for you as a young person in music to have that experience. How did it shape you?
Well, I it was great. It was like after all the years of not being recognized for what I my gifts, really, that I was always grateful for. It was great to be recognized. But one thing I have to say, I never for a minute bought into the celebrity fame kind of thing. In fact, I always felt kind of like I didn't really belong because I kept saying, you know, if they only find out who I really am, just a regular guy, they're going to drop me, you know, because I would see people in the halls and meet well-known people, and they kind of seemed like they were going with that whole fame thing. And to me, it always amazed me when people, and still does, when they ask me for an autograph. I was brought up with the British manners and absolutely, thank you, ma'am, you know. But it always amazes me that people think that they're like the who, do you know who I am syndrome. I never bought into that. So that kind of surprised me, when they think you're going to be impressed by getting a limo and doing videos. For me, I was like, wow, a free trip to England. Wow, a free trip to California. I get to see the country and perform my music. So it was like, I just had a great time. And whenever I could have any free time, I would see the nature wherever I was. I'd go look in the mountains and the sea. That's my inspiration, love and nature, you know.
So your next album after that was one that you wrote called Road to Freedom, and
right.
It was focused on Nelson Mandela. Why did Nelson Mandela inspire you?
Well, how could he not? But, I mean, the whole album, I wasn't about Nelson Mandela, but it became the title song. And it was the second album after Blind to Reason, and it wound up on MCA, which is a whole other long story. But in 1990, I was out in Los Angeles trying to write a few more songs. And on the news, Nelson Mandela was freed after 27 years. And it's just, how could you not be inspired by the story? It's one of the huge stories of someone standing up for rights and being, you know, denied and persecuted. So I just imagine him doing these interviews and flying around the country, the U.S. at the time. And I imagine him looking from a plane down on the Rocky Mountains. And that was the first verse. And the song grew from that image. You know, I tried to get that to him, and I never could. And then right before he was passed away, we had some kind of a connection through his, I think, niece. But I always wanted him to hear the song, just as an homage. Wow, what an inspiration you've been to me. Someone that has followed and the path of, you know, nonviolent resistance, which goes back to really what our Lord told us to do. But, you know, what a hard thing to do and to walk that road to freedom. It became a kind of an anthem in the song for other people like Dr. King, American Indian leaders like Russell Means, who just passed away. I mean, you know, people that you stand up for your rights and just get told, no, you have no right to live. And this goes back to my view, Shelley, Leonard Bernstein's quote. That's why I don't watch the news. It's all violence. It's all bad. And I, as an artist, just try to do what Leonard Bernstein said. Our response to violence, he said, is to make music more beautifully, more devotedly, and more often. And that's about all we can do, at least all I can do. If I start watching the news and I get so depressed, I can't even move. So I just try to bring some beauty to the world as a musician.
We're talking with Grayson Hugh, and we'll be back after the break.
Talk feel so lost, 'cause I don't know what to do. Now what if I choose the wrong thing to do? I'm so afraid of disappointing you. So I need to talk to you and ask you for your guidance, especially today when my life is so cloudy. Guide me until I'm sure I open my heart. Oh yes. My hopes and dreams are fading fast. I'm all burnt out.
Smoke, you and me. Don't give up on birth control either. There are more methods than you think. Visit Bedsider.org to compare all the choices and put the bogus myths to bed at Bedsider.org. But we got options tonight. Brought to you by Bedsider and the Ad Council. Bedsider.org.
Welcome back. We're talking with Grace and Hugh, and we've been having a good conversation even off the air about the music business and what it was like to be in the midst of things and hold on to your artistry and be able to hold on to yourself at the same time.
Right.
These days, so many young artists are discovering a new way of doing their art, and that is using the gift of crowdfunding.
Yes.
For independent projects. Talk about why you made the decision to venture down that path to create new music.
Well, it takes money to make a record of quality, and hopefully the more, the better it is. Oftentimes, the more money it takes to make it. But nothing like in the old days when record companies would throw money at you and make huge, huge budget videos that you could have done just as well with a commercial holding it up. Hey, buy this record. But it was kind of a no-brainer when it came time after an American record was released in 2010. I keep writing songs, and it was time to make a new record. And I became aware of crowdfunding through other people that were doing it. And one of my best friends in the press, Leonard Pitts Jr., who writes for the Miami Herald Tribune, also a Pulitzer Prize winner in 2003 for commentary, has been very kind to me over the years. And he mentioned me and said, Grayson, why don't you do this crowdfunding thing? And count me in for the first $100. And God bless Leonard Pitts. He made good on his word. And gave me the idea, really. And we asked for some money for an American record to finish it, but it wasn't a formal crowdfunding through a site. Now for Back to the Soul, I'm in the second campaign for it. The first one was to pay for the recording, and people for a certain amount of money, they'll get a signed CD, or you get something for your money. You don't just contribute. And so that was done down in Charleston, South Carolina. Now for this campaign, we're raising the funds to mix, master, and release and press the CDs. And it's not as much money, but it really does take the support of the fans in this day and age. It takes a village, and it really makes a difference. And the fans feel involved because they get album credits, a thank you on the CD liner notes. And they get an advance copy assigned and all kinds of interesting things.
And describe crowdfunding for those that don't know anything about it, because so many artists and independent artists are doing it now. Describe it.
Well, it's an online thing, and you go on to it, you log in for free, and then all you got to do is come up with a password, and then you say you want to contribute to this. Mine is on Indiegogo, and it makes it very easy to do it. You just click. And you choose the level of your contribution, and you see your reward for that level. And you make the contribution, and it's already set up through me and my bank account for the record. It goes directly in there. And for Indiegogo, if I don't raise the entire amount, they take a 9% cut for administrating the crowdfunding. If you make your goal, it'll take a little less, like 4%. So we're trying to reach the goal by next week. April, a minute before midnight, April 24th.
Now, for you, as you're working on this project and using the gift of crowdfunding,
yeah.
How does it shape the music? Because you've had the experience of working for the large corporation to create mm-hmm. music and art,
right.
And now you're doing it this way where the fans are a part of investing and creating it. What difference does it make?
Well, in this entrepreneurial system, it's like a small business, and it's much more... I mean, I do not have the money. I never did, even when I was
like
on
so
RCA,
artists.
Like so many artists. So really, you don't have the luxury of a corporation like RCA or MCA or Sony giving you a lot of money to go on tour and to do a lot of the exciting things. That's true, but you have freedom to do what you want as an artist. And even when I'm writing, I don't feel as someone breathing down my neck. A lot of times in the old days, I would be trying to write. And even though I'd be alone in the room, I'd feel like the almost the presence of the record label people saying, now don't do that. You got to do this. You can only be this kind of style. So
you have to write a hit.
You have to write a hit. Yeah, that's the word. I don't like Eric Clapton said, I wouldn't know how to write a hit if you paid me. And I feel the same way. I just write what comes out of my heart. And if some of the things become hits, great. Or if people like them, that's wonderful. Because after all, that's why I do music, is to communicate.
And you want the freedom to be able to communicate.
Exactly. In the way that I want to do it, because it is all about the art, Shelley.
So let's take a break and listen to one of your duets with Betty Wright.
Okay.
The fire's out, we should both be gone.
Some people are made for each other. Some people can love one another for life. How about us? Some people can hold it together.
Can we?
How about
Welcome back. We're talking with Grace and Hugh about music and artistry and this new thing called the digital world in music. So you've had a chance to journey through different forms of music. How does that impact your art form?
Well, you know, Blind to Reason was the, they told me that was the last record to be released on cassette, CD, and vinyl. So, I mean, around that time, at least for RCA. So, I mean, when I came down from Cape Cod to Mary Polly in Danbury, Connecticut, I arrived with a typewriter and a bunch of shoe boxes filled with cassette tapes. And her son, now my stepson, well, he thought that was just great because he's a engineer. He likes stuff like that, you know. But I mean, he taught me how to convert all my cassettes to digital so I could have a library of all my works in progress and recordings. I've since learned how to do digital recording almost, but I really rely on engineers like Bill Ahern at Tape Works, who I'm working with, to mix. It definitely, as far as how it's impacted me, it's a great way, as we've been talking on the break, how to communicate with your fans all over the world at the touch, at the click of a mouse. You know, it's amazing.
So what difference do you think music makes in the world as it goes forward? How does it travel and impact people's lives?
I can't begin to tell you, Shelley, of the people that have written to me by letter and now mostly email on my website, how my music, speaking just for me, has affected their lives in very personal ways and in almost invariably in a positive way. That's why they're writing me to say things like, you helped me and my boyfriend get through his cancer. Your music soothed my wife when she was going through chemo. You know, things like that. And, you know, not just medical things, but emotional turmoil, breakups, financial worries. Music, as we were talking during the break, is an escape and it's an outlet and it's a relief from all the troubles in the world. And for me, I just I can't take all the bad news that you see on TV. To me, music is just a way to bring some beauty to the world, as I've said before. And if I can do that and make people feel better, then I pay back in some small portion the gift that God has given me.
Now, when you think about your current project, Back to the Soul,
yeah.
You mentioned that in the past you played music in a church.
Yes.
Talk about how that gospel strain is also a part of your expression of music.
Well, when I was growing up, I was deeply attracted to first rhythm and banging the pots and pans and drumming and African music in particular. And I've been gifted somehow with the ability to get that. I can reproduce rhythms, complicated African rhythms, just by hearing it. I actually ended up studying it. But also the style of music that I would that I loved the most was soul music. And it, you know, a lot of people often would say, God, how do you sound black, but you're a white kid from suburbia. But you know what? You call it imitation, whatever. That's what I love. And when I got the job playing piano at Warburton Community Chapel in Hartford, when I was a teenager, and I did it for about a couple of years, it was like coming home. Musically, it was coming home. But I remember there's a story that Leonard Pitts likes to quote, when they saw me for the first service, this little white kid, you know, the only one, you know, and I'm doing it a little bit different, but the mother of one of the singers stood up and said, now, I know that he's doing something a little different, but he's got the feeling, you know, and everyone clapped, you know. And so Leonard Pitts likes to say, I know he might be doing something a little different, but he's got the feeling. So soul music was my earliest influence. The first record I bought was What I'd Say by Ray Charles with Birthday Money. And I memorized those piano solos. I still play them to today. And anyway, it also, I've been handed a note by my wife. It mentioned that how Back to the Soul makes you want to dance.
Mm.
We recently did some live shows with a band who ended up being on the record.
And talk now, about who's on the record this
yes,
time.
Well, on the record, I have a great band. A fan of mine contacted me through, again, Facebook, a guy named Jim Quick, who has a band, Jim Quick and Coastline in South Carolina. And they're a big beach music band, but they're, you know, which is basically about soul music. And he said, listen, I've been a fan of yours since I was 18. I'd love for us to back you up and then have my band do your, be your band. So we did a bunch of shows like that. And these guys, I mean, I was originally thinking of going to Muscle Shoals for this record. And I talked to the studio to get some of the original Swampers on the album. And I was going to do that. But when I heard these guys, oh my Lord, these, I mean, it sounded like we had been playing for years. And they just, I sometimes think it's something south of the Mason-Dixon line in the earth or the food that just, you either get that feel or you don't. And a lot of folks up north just don't have it. So I could not be happier. We have Cameron Dudley on drums, Casey Meyer on guitar, 34 years old, sounds like Steve Cropper. Albert Rogers, who played with me in the 90s on bass, he's also played with Levon Helm. Glenn Tippett on saxophones. Who am I leaving out? My wife, Polly Messer, the brilliant Polly Messer. Don't leave her out.
Because she's right here in the studio. She's letting you know.
She's singing all the harmony vocals, as she did also on American Record and co-produced it with me. And she just has a voice that is like a saxophone, a trumpet, a guitar. She can do anything. And then we have a featured guest, a good friend of ours, Pete Anderson, who was Dwight Yoakam's lead guitarist for years, but he's gone back lately to his blues roots. He grew up in Detroit, and really, that was his first influence. He's done about 4 or 5 blues albums and won awards, and he's doing a great, he did a great solo on the song of mine called Rock and Roll Man that I want to tell you, it sounds, it reminds me of if B.B. King played Stratocaster. It's, I mean, wait to hear it. It's, it'll make you want to get up and dance.
And so when we think about what you're doing now, and you've been playing in various venues throughout Connecticut, of course, Infinity Hall and many other locations. So Back to the Soul is, we're hoping, coming out when?
I am hoping for a June release. Hopefully the money will continue to come in the next week and really help us get this mixed and mastered and pressed. And as soon as we can get it out to all the fans and to the whole world, it'll be great.
And if people want to find out more, I know that you, Grace, and Hugh are on YouTube. So there's a number of videos that show your music. And also people can find you on Facebook. And what's your website?
Well, anyone can just go to my website, graysonhugh.net. And graysonhugh.net. And right on the landing page, you'll see a video about the campaign.
Excellent. And so if people want to be able to be a part of that, they can find it on Facebook or find graysonhugh.net. And also, we're all going to be looking forward to hearing of the release in June. So
yes.
Thank you so much, Grace and Hugh, for your gift of music in the community. And we're looking forward to Back to the Soul coming out this year.
Thanks for having me on the show, Shelley. Wonderful to see you again.
Thank you.
You're listening to Rich Answers from the Conference of Churches on Light 100.5 WRCH. Be sure to like us on Facebook and tell us what inspires you.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm fleece on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy backsplash.
I want to be a bike that races around the country.
When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest
trail. When I
grow
up,
I want to be a rocking chair on
when
a sunny
I grow up,
porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
I want to be
a...
I want to be
a... I want to be
a... I want to be
a...
I want to be
a... I want to be
a...
I
want to
be
a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage.
And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Just believe and receive the blessings God has promised you. Don't you doubt for a second. God's word is so true. Praise Him for a little. It's a lot. It's
concludes today's Rich Answers program from the Conference of Churches on Light 100.5 WRCH. If you enjoyed hearing our segments today, you can download them for free on iTunes. Also, be sure to connect with us on the web at conferenceofchurches.org or contact us on Facebook or Twitter to suggest a guest or topic you would like to learn more about. I'm Reverend Dr. Shelley Best from the Conference of Churches. Thank you for listening. God bless you and have a wonderful day.